The Cambridge Marketing Podcast with Kiran Kapoor. Brought to you by Cambridge Marketing College. See their range of courses and apprenticeships at marketingcollege.com.
Hello, I'm Kiran Kapoor, and this week on the Cambridge Marketing Podcast, a lot of acronyms.
The GDPR applies across the whole of the EU and three of the four EEA EFTA countries. We've also got something sitting in the wings, which is called EPR. Please make sure that you have a look at what you need to do under PECR.
And the do's and don'ts of GDPR.
One of the things to be aware of with this is that you can't just go, well, it's legitimate interest, I'm going to do this. Everyone needs to know about my wonderful product, and therefore I will email everybody.
The Cambridge Marketing Podcast from Cambridge Marketing College.
So this week's subject is GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulation, which came into force 2 years ago. And for most of us, it probably manifests itself with those annoying pop-up accept our cookies setting every time you browse a website. I'm joined by Steve Bax, owner and founder of Bax Interaction, a Cambridgeshire-based market research company. Steve, welcome. Let's start with what are the data protection and privacy regulations that apply in the UK?
Thank you, Kieran. Regulations for data protection and privacy have been very topical for marketers in recent years. And the UK and Europe have seen the General Data Protection Regulation and the Data Protection Act 2018 introduced. The Data Protection Act 2018 enacts the GDPR's requirements in UK law, so that's where it sits. We've also got the PECR, which is the Privacy and Electronic Communications Regulations, and they've been in place since 2003 and have been updated both in 2018 and 2019. We've also got something sitting in the wings, which is called the EPR, which is the Electronic Privacy Regulations, which is potentially a replacement for PECR in the future. But whether that will happen and when that will happen remains to be seen.
OK, that's a great landscape. So let's start with the one that probably most of us have heard of, which is GDPR. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, well, this came into force in May, as I say, 25th of May. It's etched in my diary somewhere, and made some very significant changes to the data protection and privacy landscape. And the key changes were around such things as territorial scope. There was an increase in the scope of it, which we'll talk about later, I think. A significant increase in penalties, and this really drove organisational change because the increase in maximum financial penalties was dramatic. And it went from £500,000 as a maximum in the UK under the previous Data Protection Act to 4% of annual global revenue or €20 million, whichever is the greater. So this definitely mobilised organisations to act in terms of ensuring that they would be compliant with the new GDPR regulation. Other elements, consent. The elements of consent changed quite significantly too. And again, I think we'll probably talk about that later on. And there was more in terms of lawful processing and how that impacted the GDPR regulation also. Individual rights increased significantly too. And there were other elements such as privacy by design, which were introduced, the increasing requirement for data protection officers, the requirement for data protection impact assessments, and much more stringent requirements on accountability, governance, and transfers of data. All of which, by the way, are particularly significant at this moment in time.
So there's obviously quite a lot of legislation. Where does GDPR apply?
The GDPR applies across the whole of the EU and three of the four EEA EFTA countries, which are Iceland, Liechtenstein, and Norway. The fourth that it doesn't apply to is Switzerland. For the purposes of our discussions at the moment, it currently applies to the UK.
And who does it apply to?
It applies to the organisations in the EU and the three that we mentioned earlier, the EEA EFTA countries. And it applies to all organisations that are processing personal data, and that's particularly important. That's what the GDPR is all about. And it also applies, which is particularly pertinent, to organisations outside the EU that offer goods or services to individuals in the EU, and will also apply to us, the UK, post-December. And one of the key changes was the increasing responsibility on processors as well as controllers. So traditionally, data protection legislation had been aimed firmly, fairly and squarely at the controllers. But post the GDPR's enforcement, it also applies equally to those processing the data. So it could be a separate processing company, such as an email marketing agency, for example.
And what are the elements that marketers need to be aware of?
I think the key elements really are that they need to know that it applies to natural persons, sometimes called data subjects. So these are people that can be identified by reference to their name, an identification number, location data, other factors such as physicals, physiological, genetic, economic identities. So there's a raft of different elements that fit within personal data. So that's important that organisations are aware of that. The other one that when we did a lot of training workshops in the run-up to the GDPR that people were very confused about is it also applies to individuals in businesses as well. In other words, if something is targeted to an individual, they have the same rights as an individual, irrespective of whether they're within an organisation or not. Other key areas, the lawful basis, we talked about a little bit earlier on as being a change. And this is something that I always emphasise organisations should know inside out. There needs to be a lawful basis for processing personal data. And it needs to pass one of, or sometimes more than one of, six tests. And this is really important. And we've got some very topical examples of that to highlight here as well. The six tests are consent. So when we're talking about consent, that's an individual giving clear consent for you as an organisation to process their personal data for a specific purpose. And that's really important. It's got to be a specific purpose. And we'll give an example of that here. We've got restaurants, pubs, bars and takeaways being asked to collect contact details, fairly vague request to collect contact details for the purposes of test and trace, for the NHS test and trace. And as part of that, we're asking organisations that traditionally perhaps haven't been as involved in the requirements of the GDPR as others to start to take on the requirements of the GDPR. So they need to be transparent. They need to start having privacy notices. They've got to define their lawful purpose. So the key thing here is that one purpose is test and trace. But if they just get consent for that purpose, they can't use it for anything else, such as marketing, for example, which might actually be a good idea. They've also got to keep this data safe. So they need to really consider this whole aspect of lawful basis. And one of the things they could do, for example, is to get a consent for the additional purpose of marketing. So they could ask for consent to test and trace. They could also ask for consent to marketing purposes and so on. So that might be one way of dealing with that. So that's, I think, a very topical example at the moment. The second is contractual necessity. So if you've got a contract to be put in place, or you're working with a customer as part of a contract, then that's a lawful basis for processing their personal data. Equally, if they've made inquiries that are leading towards a contract, and I don't just mean when is the marketing college open, but if they're moving towards a contract, then it's a lawful basis for processing their personal data under contractual necessity there. Third is a legal obligation. So this could be, for example, accounts reporting, that type of obligation. Then you would have a lawful basis for processing personal data for that. Protecting their vital interests. And in simple terms, keeping somebody safe, keeping them alive would be a justifiable lawful basis for processing personal data. Public interest or official duty would be another lawful basis, which we probably don't cover too much here for marketers. And then finally, legitimate interests, which are particularly important.
So what's a legitimate interest?
I hoped you would ask me that. So legitimate interest is all about the processing being deemed necessary for the legitimate interests of yourselves as an organisation or of a third party. And this is where you deem it legitimate to use personal data that you consider and that you have assessed using something called a legitimate interest assessment, that overrides an individual's legitimate interest. In other words, there's a good reason for you to use that data. So in a business-to-business context, this might be that you have something that is of specific interest to a lead that you've gained, perhaps from LinkedIn or something similar, to make contact with that particular individual because you have deemed that it's in their interest to know about what it is you're communicating with them about. So that is just one example. And indeed, the GDPR recognises that direct marketing could be deemed a legitimate interest. Now, one of the things to be aware of with this is that you can't just go, well, it's legitimate interest, I'm going to do this. Everyone needs to know about my wonderful product, and therefore I will email everybody. There, you need to have also considered whether or not another lawful basis would be better. In other words, it might be that on balance, consent may be a better basis to go for, in that, you know, perhaps not everybody actually wants to hear from you, for example. So you do need to be careful with this one. But it does mean that it is a route that many marketers use instead of consent. But you have to be careful with it. And one of the reasons for that is that with legitimate interests, the onus is far more on the organisation to ensure that it is right than on the individual. Because obviously where the individual has consented, then the onus is far more on them, gives them all sorts of rights. But the organisation has that individual's consent to do whatever the purpose that they have defined to that individual is. So there's quite a balancing act to do there.
That's interesting, because I think a lot of marketers tend to think consent is the only element that you can go with. What actually has been the impact of GDPR over the first couple of years of its being in force? I mean, you mentioned there were big fines. Have there been any fines?
There have indeed, yes. there have been significant fines since the GDPR was introduced. If we look at the top 10, for example, let's look at those top three. So the two that have yet to be fully applied are the largest of the fines that have been levied, and they are number one, British Airways, and the fine that has been mooted there is €204 million.
Wow,
significant.
Yeah.
The second is Marriott International, and that's €110 million. Both of those by the UK's Data Protection Authority, the ICO. The third, if we just talk about perhaps the top three, is Google, and there's €50 million fine there from France. In terms of what are they all about, the British Airways one is insufficient technical and organisational measures to ensure information security. So that's that one. And the Marriott is exactly the same. So it's not having measures in place to ensure that data was being held safely. So personal data has been compromised in both cases. From a Google point of view, this one was all about not having a sufficient legal basis for the data processing that was being conducted. So that's that one. So it just gives you a couple of examples of what's happening there.
Gosh.
So yes, so, is the answer.
So you mentioned at the beginning, we've talked about PECR. So how does that sit with the GDPR?
The PECR, as we said, has been amended. These regulations have been amended a number of times, but the most recent have been in 2018. which was to ban cold calling of claims management services and to introduce director liability for serious breaches of the marketing rules, which was a big step. In 2019, to ban cold calling of pension schemes in certain circumstances and to incorporate the GDPR's definition of consent. And that came into effect in March 2019. But the PECR is all about the rules for marketing and communications. That's really what it's all about. It's a very good idea if you want to find out more to have a look at the ICO, the Information Commissioner's Office, for an excellent guide as to which elements of the PECR you need to bring into play depending on what type of activity you're doing. So if we look at something like emails or texts, then for individual customers, the consumer must have given specific consent, or you can use something which is called soft opt-in with existing customers, individuals again, remember, where you can send emails to them without consent. Have you met certain conditions, which are you've got to have met all of these. You've obtained their contact details in the course of a sale of a product or service to that person. You're only marketing your own or similar products or services. And you gave the person a simple opportunity to refuse or opt out, both right at the beginning and in every single message after that. But the key thing, I think, Kieran, that people don't remember with this is you've got to actually comply with both. It's not you comply with the GDPR, therefore PECR doesn't matter, or you comply with PECR and the GDPR doesn't matter. One of the things that we found we had to get across, particularly in the training, in the run-up to the GDPR being introduced, is that you've actually got to comply with both of these things. So I hope that helps a little bit. And, you know, that's what's in force at the moment. So you do need to comply with both. So if you're not familiar with the PECR and you think you've got all of the GDPR side covered as a marketer, please make sure that you have a look at what you need to do under PECR.
Thank you. And you mentioned EPR. There's lots of acronyms today. So what's happening with the EPR?
Okay, I think the simple answer to that is that it's back in limbo again. And the EPR has been bumbling around really since Consumer Views were researched back in 2016, which might not sound a long time ago, but think how the electronic world, electronic communications have changed in the last 4 years. And it will give you some idea of the sliding problem that you have with the e-privacy regulation. The whole idea really was to align the privacy regulations with the GDPR from an electronic communications point of view, make sure that everything in the good old cookie law that you mentioned earlier on, which obviously sits within the PECR at the moment, and trying to align that with everything within the GDPR. The problem is that there was some fairly stringent things within the proposal for the EPR, which organisations around the world and specifically in the EU, obviously, were not too comfortable about, because the rules started to impact on the ability to market, for example, from a business to business point of view, using emails, which we haven't specifically said, where you can email an organisation. From a business to business point of view. Now, one of the things that EPR wanted to do was to cover B2B communications and make that consent based, which of course caused a lot of consternation with organisations. So a lot of commentators really don't think that e-privacy will come into force as a regulation before 2023 and probably won't come into effect with a 24-month implementation period until 2025. So whether this will happen or not, Kieran, really is who knows. And key things are that there's real uncertainty with artificial intelligence, Internet of Things, autonomous vehicles, and a really unsatisfactory and inconsistent overlap between the GDPR and very outdated e-privacy directive, which is the PECR.
Wow. Steve, that was absolutely great. It was a tour de force, and I've understood a lot more about GDPR and PECR. Before I let you go, can you get your crystal ball out and tell me what's going to happen post-Brexit for all of this in the UK?
Okay, so
this is probably the real one, isn't it, that we want to spend a little bit of time on, not too much, I hope. But the key thing is that the GDPR will no longer directly apply at the end of the transition period, which at the moment is after the 31st of December of this year. It's not that long away. And organisations will still need to comply, though, as the DPA enacts the GDPR requirements with some variations. The government has issued a statutory instrument, which is called the Data Protection, Privacy and Electronic Communications Amendments, EU Exit Regulations, which amends the DPA 2018 and merges it with the requirements of the EU GDPR. And this new regime will be known as the UK GDPR. Get your head around that one. But in terms of from a GDPR point of view for organisations, there is little material difference. But there's a big one. Post-Brexit, in other words, after December, we will be deemed a third country to the EU. And one of the concerns that I have that are very topical and recent are that there are concerns that whether or not the UK will be given an adequacy decision. And Michel Barnier, the senior EU negotiator, indicated that questions remained over the UK's commitment to data rights and standards, which is a big issue in terms of getting this adequacy agreement. And bearing in mind that the last adequacy agreement, which was Japan, took around 2 years to bring into effect, then it's a big issue for UK-based organisations, in my view, that is just not on many's radar from what I'm hearing. So if we don't get adequacy, we've either got to put safeguards in place, which are pretty onerous, and we've got to start thinking about that now, or we've got to look at codes of conduct. But at the moment, there's nothing between the EU and the UK in that regard. So a code of conduct would be something like the EU-US Privacy Shield. Or some form of derogation, which might include something like getting customer consent to share data between EU and the UK, for example. So there's a raft of issues around that. And I know we haven't got a lot of time to talk about that, Kieran, but I would urge organisations to have a good look at what happens if the UK doesn't get adequacy, to ensure that they are still able to move data in the way in which they have been used to do between the EU and ourselves. The other one that is a big one that I'll just finish off on, Kieran, is that most organisations in the UK that are marketing in the EU will also have to appoint an EU representative. And this was something that caused a lot of consternation with small organisations when we did the training workshops. So again, that's something they need to ensure they put in place and needs to be very much on their radar as we near the end of this year, if it isn't already.
Steve, that's absolutely great. Thank you very much indeed. And that suggests that our journey with GDPR and PECR is not over by a long way. Steve Bax of Bax Interaction, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Kieran.
The Cambridge Marketing Podcast from Cambridge Marketing College, training marketing and PR professionals across the globe.
Coming up next time on the Cambridge Marketing Podcast, we're focusing in on digital marketing.
There's no fuzzy metrics. It's all accountable. Every penny you spend, every click you get, the visits to the website, you can track, measure and monitor all of it.
My guest for next time is James Hume, with some handy tips for planning your next marketing campaign on digital platforms.
You bring them to a product page or a webinar sign up, or an inquiry page, is get them to focus on one thing.
That's coming up next time on the Cambridge Marketing Podcast. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and I'll see you next week.